This is Lawrence with a brief introduction. This episode, like all of the others we have released, was recorded in 2016, which explains why our cultural references are so out of date and why we don't seem overcome with ennui and despair. We get the name of the audio drama we're reviewing wrong. It is actually called Little Nasties, not whatever nonsense we're saying. You can now get it for free from the Tales from Beyond the Pale podcast, where they've started releasing the episodes. With that in mind, I'm changing my recommendation a little bit. If you can move past the objectionable content of the episode, I think that it is so bad it's good if you don't have to pay for it. And finally, a trigger warning. We talk extensively about pedophilia in this episode. Nothing too graphic, but we definitely acknowledge it and its strange connection to child beauty pageants. It was unavoidable given the content of the episode we are reviewing. I'm not sure we're entirely tasteful, but I know for damn sure that the episode we were talking about wasn't, and I think we at least did better than they did. Please enjoy this episode of Bad Time Radio. My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio. So this is our sixth episode. We're doing a little bit of a change of pace here. We're talking about a Tales from Beyond the Pale episode called Lil Monsters. It was released in 2015, I think. This is a change of pace partially because it's so recent, but mostly because this is actually something that you could pay for. You can get it on Audible or off the Tales from Beyond the Pale website. And it's a Larry Fessenden, like, produced series, so most of them are pretty high quality, and I'd encourage you to check the series out, but we might have a bit of a different opinion about this specific episode. So, first thing, let's go around the room and give a brief, would you recommend this episode to someone? Raul?
Yes, I would. I liked it. Things happened. There were a lot of happenings, which is apparently the one criteria I look at when I choose to like something. So, yes, I liked it. I think it was worth it.
This is the first time Raul has actually liked something we listened to. Ronald?
I would definitely not recommend this. Thought it was pretty garbage.
Really?
I've heard that the other ones are good, so I'm not going to make a condemnation on the whole show, but the writing and acting in this one are just not good. And I didn't think the story was very good either, so not a recommend for me.
I think that there's a germ of a really good idea here that is not explored at all. I'm not sure if it's that the acting's terrible or just the writing, but yeah.
It could be just one.
Yeah. I can't recommend this. If you listen to us and you're like, that sounds crazy, maybe check it out, but, you know, this, you have to actually pay money to get this, and I don't think it's worth it. Okay, so now we're going to roll for the summary. I'll be 1-2, Ronald 3-4, Raul 5-6, and we're rolling a d6, which is important to specify, because otherwise you guys might wonder, never mind, that's a dumb joke and I'm abandoning it. Here we go.
That's here.
Fuck, I have to summarize it, and I didn't really pay that good attention.
Oh, no.
Okay, so you guys are going to help.
This is the summary of Lil Monsters.
What is that?
What am I parodying?
Is it the toddler version of the children's show?
Yes. It's the toddler version. It's like Rugrats meets Real Monsters.
Or just, it's like Yo Gabba Gabba is to Arthur, so Little Monsters is to Real Monsters.
Sure, yeah. I feel like Yo Gabba Gabba and Arthur have less in common, but...
But I meant just sort of at the, like... Never mind.
Yeah, the maturity level, sure.
So we open on a woman who is taking her daughter to be in a beauty pageant.
Mm-hmm.
Raul, can you pull out your notes so we can get some goddamn names out of here?
Bethany.
Bethany is the kid.
You never learned her name.
I think.
Mrs.
Whatever.
Mrs. Brownstone.
Have you been dancing with her again? God damn it.
Stop dancing with the embodiment of heroin,
what
Ronald.
What is her goddamn name? Miss House?
Whatever.
Bethany House?
Maybe. So she's... I'm going to just call her the mother.
Sure.
So she's escorting her daughter to a beauty pageant. She makes a bunch of comments to her
Let's just get this out of the way. This thing is written by a guy named, I'm going to pull it
Knox.
Up. Nah, the guy who wrote it.
Mrs. Knox.
Okay, but this is written by Eric the Red, who is apparently...
A Viking?
Nah. Eric Red,
he
sorry.
Like
he's Eric the Red.
Redbeard.
This is written by, and he's actually, by Eric Red, he's actually like a screenwriter of some renown. He wrote The Hitcher, which I think is a really good movie, although I'm not sure that the script is the main thing that makes it good. And he also wrote Near Dark, which is often held up as the best horror movie of the 1980s. It was
directed, I have not seen Near Dark.
It's directed by Catherine Bigelow. It's kind of like if Lost really? Boys wasn't dumb.
Huh. I'll have to check that out. I've seen The Hitcher.
I like The Hitcher right? a lot. It might be that I saw it when I was young. Yeah. And it
certainly wasn't bad.
Yeah. So, and he's adapting his own short story. So obviously you'd expect this to be pretty well written. It isn't. And the reason it's not well written is that apparently in adapting his own short story, he was like, well, I've got all of these descriptions of things, and I can't just throw them out or suggest them.
Well, I wonder how much of it was like, hey, we need you to adapt this short story in like a day. And so he just kind of converted everything to dialogue.
I guess that could be.
Because that's what it feels like. It feels like it's just a straight conversion of a story to dialogue.
Yeah, but the upshot of this is that whenever the mother goes into any new situation, she will describe it everything. At great length, apparently out loud, which has the effect of, one, making this thing kind of draggy, because every time they go to a new location, she spends like a minute or two, oh, look at that beautiful banner. It's so much bigger than the one in the other location, and it's drawn in pretty, pretty flowers and shit.
But I feel like someone, it's possible for someone to act that way, which is why I was kind of okay with it.
I don't know if I've ever met anyone who's like,
I just think it's possible.
It's possible, I guess, in the sense that it's possible for a human to do anything that's physically possible for a human.
Like, you know, like she's like, really annoying and she just has to talk about something.
It's like she's like one of those people in the movies when like they have a wire and they're really terrible at it, but they're like just describing everything they see.
Oh,
and
now Gino is coming over to me to talk about the drugs.
Gino was loading his gun. Oh, no.
But so
I hope Gino doesn't shoot me.
Yeah, no, that's what it's like. That's what the whole play. That's what this whole play
is
like.
So every time she encounters a new room, she describes it at great length. And every time she thinks something, that part they make it echoey. So maybe it's her internal monologue. But it's still so awful. Now this is, and the effect is essentially just someone reading a short story to you badly.
And I honestly think that this would have played better with just a narrator.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that.
Yeah, because with a narrator and just some acted characters, I think it would have been mostly like an audiobook, but with some voice acting and music and sound effects, and that's close enough.
That would be a break of the Tales from Beyond the Pale form, which usually does. Let's see. One of them that I know of has a little bit of a narrator, but in general, they're just straight audio dramas. But this is so awful that there had to be another way. This, now, writing for radio, as I've mentioned before, is really hard. It's probably the hardest kind of writing you can do, because literally all you've got are sound effects and whatever people are saying. You lose all of the descriptive power of, like, screenwriting. You know, you have the image. Writing, you can write descriptions, and you don't have to worry about why is this suddenly allowed.
But I mean, I don't want to pan on the author too much because, yeah, like you said, writing for radio is really tough. But it's also like we don't know the circumstances and everything. But I will say that the end product just does not play very well.
Yeah. So let's get back to the summary a little bit. But just every time we describe something, imagine that this woman. Oh, also, she's voiced by Jill Zarin, who is apparently one of the Real Housewives of New York. She, I don't think, acquits herself terribly well, but it could be this piece of shit script, you know?
Yeah, right. It could have been either. I mean, I can't tell if somebody with better chops would have actually done any better in this situation, but it's possible, but maybe not.
There are ones of these that have Vincent D'Onofrio, Tales from Beyond the Pale, that have Vincent D'Onofrio, who is...
He's the guy in Daredevil?
Yeah, he's one of the finest actors of our generation.
Really?
And he will occasionally struggle to sell something. So, you know, radio... is sort of uniquely, utterly dependent on the script, and there's only so far.
Interesting.
Yeah. He doesn't elevate the material, but I'm not sure that if you put in, I don't know, like, the finest female voice, I'm not sure that, oh man, what's her name? Femme Shepherd could have done
it. Oh, right. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. I can't remember her name.
This is Lawrence jumping in from the future. I am about to get Jennifer Hale's name incredibly wrong. This has been bothering me for literally 5 years that I could have fucked this up this bad, so I'm taking this opportunity to correct myself.
Jill something. Damn it, I really would. Haley. Jennifer Haley.
Ah, Jennifer Haley. That sounds
right. Yeah, I'm not sure Jennifer Haley could have, raised this, you know? Mm-hmm. She's overmastered by the script.
I also think that she plays it really annoying, which
that
makes
sense. That could be how
it's
written, though.
It also makes sense considering she's describing everything out loud.
Yeah, if someone actually did that to you, you would start really annoyed, and quickly, if you discovered that they did it to everything, you'd be like, oh, you clearly had a traumatic brain injury.
Please stop.
You're one of those.
I'm really sorry. Okay, I'm gonna put up with this because I don't want to be a shitty to a disabled person.
Yeah.
So, anyways, so she's talking to her daughter. She's explaining at great length how her daughter's going to win this beauty pageant and it's going to make everything worthwhile.
She has the diatribes of how she used to be a beauty pageant star.
And how she couldn't because her father came back from, I think, Vietnam. Gulf War in a wheelchair, so she couldn't continue. Apparently she's been homeschooling this girl and she's doing the whole pageant mom thing. I don't know if we really need to go into it more than that. The girl seems reasonably happy with her life. There's some talk of her hiding her shoes because they're uncomfortable and complaining about having to wear false teeth. But in general, she seems reasonably happy and to love her mother.
She doesn't really want to go to
these. She doesn't really like the pageant, but over the course of the thing, I think it's like pretty well defined that she does care about her mother and she doesn't hate her life.
Yeah. And her mother, I mean, she's not the abusive kind of pageant mom.
Definitely. Like, she's trying to live vicariously through her daughter.
She's over-involved, but she's not abusive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as pageant mothers go, she's the best version you can be and still be a goddamn pageant mother who are amongst the lowest form of life. Morally speaking.
Hey, pageant fathers are just as bad.
That's fair. There are more pageant mothers, but pageant fathers are bad too. Don't put your kids in goddamn beauty pageants, okay? We're just going to... This is like the first time old time or bad time radio has judged anyone. If you put your parents...
I mean, I judge people all the time.
Yeah, but this is the first time we've come out officially.
I'm employed as a judge.
That's
so fair.
But, I mean, we don't think... we're cool. We're cool with spaghetti sauce fetishes.
What?
We're cool with, you know, whatever. If you have rape fantasies, as long as you're acting them out responsibly, we're okay. If you put your kid in a goddamn beauty pageant, you're a bad person, okay? Don't let that happen.
What if your child is a robot?
Then it's not a child.
Child robot.
What?
Robo child.
You ever seen that movie AI by Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, he shouldn't be in a goddamn beauty pageant either.
What about Bicentennial Man? Have you seen that?
That doesn't have a robot child. That's a horror.
That has Robin Williams.
That's actually, if you think about it, that's actually a horror movie about a family being haunted by an invulnerable and invincible or eternal Robin Williams.
It's like he just wanted to be loved.
Spoiler alert, he dies at the end.
Oh, that's good.
Wait, he does?
I mean,
he becomes a human, then he dies.
I don't remember that.
That's good.
Huh.
They finally were free of his shtick.
Well, I think he stopped being their servant after like three generations.
I thought he found another robot.
let's get back to the summer.
I think we should maybe just review
Bicentennial.
Let's review our vague memories of Bicentennial.
It's like I thought he had a shotgun.
And if he had, that would have made me like this movie more. So if you watch it and it turns out he has a shotgun, no, it got 4 stars for me. But if he doesn't, it's only 2 stars, okay?
Also, tweet at me so that I know to go back and revisit that.
But only if he's got a shotgun. If he doesn't, don't tweet at me.
Yeah, but make sure to watch the director's cut.
If it exists. And if not, you find that fucking director and make you one.
With a shotgun.
Yeah. And you use the shotgun to make him make you the director's cut, and then you make him put the shotgun in the director's cut.
Yeah, you know, somewhere.
Yeah, so back to it. So they are going to a beauty pageant. Weirdly, it's being held at night, which they say is unusual. I think that that's where you would hold it, when you would hold it generally, so people, like, could go to it, but I'm not an expert. They go inside. The MC is voiced by... Mr. Plush is his name, and he's voiced by Jack Ketchum, who's actually like a well-respected author of extreme horror, who I guess just really wanted to get into podcasts.
What is extreme horror?
Like really gory and a lot of sexual violence. But
Oh, like American Psycho.
Not a little bit less arty than that.
Okay.
You know, like, a lot of people getting tortured to death, not much supernatural, that sort of thing.
That sounds like American Psycho.
Well, think
American
more like
Psycho,
Texas...
but actually has, like, you know, artistic value.
Yeah, think more like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hmm. Okay.
Also, think about his character in this.
Yeah, well, they sometimes do. Okay, anyways.
Wait, Patrick Bateman?
Come on, let's
his character
in a beauty pageant?
No, his character, Mr. Plush, in the thing we just watched.
Yeah, here's what makes American Psycho the movie artistic. At the end of it, you're not actually sure if Patrick Bateman murdered anyone. See, that's art.
It also is just art in the sense that it clearly has more motivation than just to see people die.
Yeah, for instance, it wants you to think about how creepy it is to really like Huey Lewis in the news.
Right, yeah. Nobody likes them except for psychos.
Exactly. That's the other thing we're coming out against this episode. Huey Lewis in the news. They know what they did. Anyways, he's voiced very, you know, smarmy, pedophile-y, which I guess I just have to say he's the male host of a little girl's beauty pageant, and you exactly know what this guy is, you know.
Yeah, you think it's going to be hinted at, but...
Nope.
Yeah.
There's no
subtlety in this.
Yeah.
I did not even think about the fact that it was, like, a male creepy host. Like, that just... It never even registered for me, like, as a possibility.
I don't think there's a non-creepy way of hosting a little girl's beauty pageant, frankly, because the whole concept is creepy. Unless the way you host it is objecting to it and then telling all of the parents in attendance that they are bad and should go home and you have called the police on them.
Hmm.
That is the non-creepy way of doing it. But there's no way to embrace the premise and not be creepy. Because it's little girls in fucking bikinis.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah.
I thought they were just wearing dresses.
No, they're I'm not 100% on this, but I think generally based on what I've seen in movies and so on, which they might be playing up the grotesquery a bit, they usually have bikinis and shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, not for everything. It's like a regular beauty show. You know how there's like the bikini contest?
I've actually never seen a beauty show.
Well, you never watched like Miss Universe?
No. I've only seen
it like one or two.
They like fuck up. Like I've seen those like on YouTube, but I've never watched the whole thing.
They're pretty boring.
And demeaning. Yeah,
it sounds boring.
And demeaning.
And just awful.
I mean...
Then you do that with little girls and it's worse.
I've never, like, paid attention to them, but they've been on in the background. Mm. And basically, yeah, there's, like, a talent. There's, like, a bikini contest usually. There's, like, a dress. And there's, like, a question and answer.
Yeah.
So,
anyways, doubling back.
It's weird.
So, the girl goes backstage to get ready, and the mother goes out into the crowd and quickly discovers that the other parents... are apparently terrified of their kids, and they're saying stuff like, I had to quit my job as a pharmaceutical something or other, which might mean he's a drug dealer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to play that up, but
They don't play anything up in
this. All the parents are totally controlled by their children.
Yeah, they're terrified of them. And one of them says, my little girl bit my wife 2 days ago, and then
she said she's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then our mother...
hinted at
yeah.
that. She was murdered by the kid.
And then our mother character is like, well, if, you know, my little girl bit me, I would beat the shit out of her.
Yeah.
So the parents are totally terrified of the kids. And backstage, the little girl encounters a whole flock of, like, other beauty pageant contestants who talk to her sort of friendly, but also sort of threatening. So they're like, you know, which of us do you think is the prettiest? And then one of them goes, I'm the prettiest, and if anyone else was prettier than me, I'd tear her face off and wear it. Which would not work, but it does show that she's pretty psycho.
I mean, have you ever seen Leatherface? He looks way better with the skin face on. You know, he doesn't look the same, but with a weird skin mask on. He looks like a totally different person.
So anyways, so the little girls are kind of creepy, but they're like, hey, you want to be best friends? And,
yeah, we eat your hair. And
yeah, all this stuff, shit. Which, yeah. And... so they start doing the talents, and this is something that I found pretty amusing. Obviously, you'd think that for the sake of a radio play, you'd want the talents to be things that would be good for the radio, so reciting poetry, singing, so on. But what do we get instead, Ronald?
We get tap dancing and baton tossing.
Which are singular. I mean, at least tap dancing makes some noise, but...
baton tossing, all you hear is the crowd... reaction.
Apparently she does a good job, though, because the crowd goes ooh and ah a bunch.
Well, I was thinking about this, and maybe they did this on purpose so that they didn't have to add any extra voice acting.
That could be fair. The young actresses who portray the little girls tend to be, I think, do a reasonably good job. They have a little bit of that little kid actor, you know, artificiality to them, but they're miles ahead of the parents, if only because they're not being asked to introduce every single goddamn room they go into.
Yeah. No, I think that the kids actually did fine in this, considering the kids.
So maybe they could sing. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they can't, but it might have been written intentionally that way.
That's fair.
Not that that's a good way to do it, because it's basically... So the choices are either he didn't think about it being on the radio, or he did think about it being on the radio and just intentionally provided us with a nothing space.
I would be actually kind of interested to read the short story and see if he even bothered changing the talents. My inclination is that so much of this is just ripped straight from the short story.
I would probably agree. Yeah.
Because, I mean, for instance, he spends a lot of time having her, the mother, when she first goes into the beauty hall, describe a banner that isn't necessary to the plot at all. And frankly, if you're just like, we're going into the hall where the beauty pageant is, I'm going to assume there's a banner and you don't have to describe it, you know?
It's also kind of weird when they show up, they're like, oh, it's empty. Why is no one here? Did it not start
that
yet?
Was weird.
And then they walk in and it fills up and it's like, oh, is that related to anything? No, it's not.
Because they try to make you worried. They're like...
Yeah, but there's
and
no...
And then suddenly they're like, oh, there are 50 people here.
And right.
Like, what?
And I've never...
This is a weird transition.
And she's like, oh, I've never seen any of these girls before. And you're like, they accidentally go to a wrong one, or are they in a different town? And it's like, no, they didn't. For some reason, she's
just
never seen these
matter.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and she also comments that she's never seen any of the parents, which I thought was sort of a nice touch, because the child beauty pageant probably isn't that big, so it would
right.
be legit weird if you hadn't met the parents
but
before.
It's not really explained why she's never seen any of the parents, because it seems like she would have.
I guess it's just some creepy details or something.
Yeah.
They're trying to creepy. I mean, there are some other things later in the story that are creepy that don't matter as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're going to get to the big one of those pretty soon. So anyways, the mother, having seen her daughter perform, goes out to smoke in the alley. And then one of the other pageant mothers and...
Peyton's
her,
mother.
Yeah, and Peyton.
Peyton
is sort of the leader of the evil kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Peyton is shouting at her mother about like a dress or something. And her mother's like, I'm so sorry, over and over and over. And then Peyton's like, that's not good enough, mother. Get the razor. And the mother produces a razor and cuts, and Peyton's like, your belly looks so pretty. They've done such a good job of covering up all the scars from when you had me. Which, weird and superfluous. I guess she was delivered by cesarean.
Right.
Which, maybe that's the point of this episode, is that people delivered by cesarean are evil. And we
and
should all
become vampires.
And we should embrace nature and get natural childbirth. So she cuts up her stomach a bit, and then Peyton's like, why don't you put a Band-Aid on it and cover it up? Which... kind of undercuts how horrifying this this thing that happened is, because if the cut is only bad enough, or can be hidden by a Band-Aid, it's not that severe.
I don't remember her saying anything about a Band-Aid.
Yeah, she produces a Band-Aid and covers it up.
Huh. That doesn't make any sense.
So, anyway...
Well, unless she just pricked herself.
Yeah.
But then it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the mother...
It sounded like she sliced her
Oh, well, there was a sound effect
that was pretty gross.
Yeah, but then they undercut it with the Band-Aid, because again, there's...
Right.
You know.
There's not a lot of consistency.
Yeah. through all this, the mother was sort of hiding because she was embarrassed of someone seeing her smoke.
Yeah.
And Peyton at one point is like, nobody can hear you, mother. See, is anyone here in this alley? And then
The mom doesn't respond. So she's like, look, see, I told you. And it's like, would somebody actually respond to that? I mean, I don't think I would.
Yeah, you've done some really creepy shit in this alley. I'd hide.
Yeah.
Also, we later find out that Peyton can apparently see through fucking walls. So I don't know why she didn't see the mother.
Maybe she chose not to.
Yeah. So anyways... The mother is now freaking out pretty hard, and she's like, these people are psycho, I need to leave, and she's saying...
Which is the normal reaction.
Yeah, she's saying all of this to herself, but she goes on like that for about 30 seconds, and then she spends the next 30 seconds talking herself out of protecting her child by saying like, well, the prize money's non-refundable, and I think she's going to win, and we could really use the prize money, and it would mean so much to my little girl.
It's kind of weird the way she like changes her argument, like almost
out
like
loud.
She was possessed or something. It was like so abrupt.
Yeah, she's
she
just
was like, no, I'm like, I need to do this for my child. Bethany will be so upset.
Well, I could see that as an inner monologue, but as, you know, saying it out loud is just kind of weird.
They do make it echo, so it's possible it's an inner monologue.
It's possible.
But it's unclear, and even then, it's not a very
well-written
inner monologue.
It's possible
because, yeah, So there's two reasons why I could echo, but it's a poorly written inner monologue because she never seems conflicted. She just goes one way and then instantly the other
way.
But
they didn't have any other monologues.
We're assuming that every time she walks into a room, she's doing an internal monologue. But then she'll
She would say stuff to the daughter also.
Yeah, while it was going on. So
maybe they're mind linked, and that's the twist.
Or
it's never revealed.
I got another twist for you. It could be that the script isn't very good.
That's the twist.
The twist is you expect it to be good, but it's not.
Like The Sixth Sense, when the twist was that guy was Bruce Willis the whole time.
Yeah. Exactly.
When I first listened to this, I was actually really expecting it to be good because I love The Hitcher so much. And then we got 5 minutes in and I'm like, oh no.
Can't hit them all out of the park, right?
Yeah, so she's convinced herself that she needs to stay, but we cut back to the little girl who's going to the bathroom.
Okay.
Or Mr. Plush is like, "Hey, Bethany," or oh man, should I do a voice?
So basically, Bethany goes and talks to Peyton, and Peyton is like, "We're gonna be friends forever."
Yeah,
and then give me a hug, and then Bethany's like, "Whoa, weird, get off me!" And then she kind of runs towards the bathroom. And on the way, she sees this dude, Mr. Plush.
And I'm going to try a little bit of a voice for this, but if you guys don't like it, we can veto it.
And Bethany's like, "Peyton, why are you looking at me so weird? What's wrong with your eyes?" She says that.
Yeah, so it's...
But it's also a small detail that doesn't matter.
matter, though. The eyes matter a little bit.
Well, they don't come up again, but we assume it's a sign of...
They matter, but they don't matter, you know?
Yeah. Anyway,
because it's explicitly revealed in, 30
seconds. Yeah.
That they're vampires. Which could be interesting, but it's
twist,
not.
Twist, yeah. But so, not really.
Anyway, let me try this Mr. Plush voice out on you. All right. So Mr. Plush is like, "Hey, little girl, what's wrong?
Why are you doing a mix of Mickey and Goofy?"
I don't know. It's just kind of my weird positive guy voice.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with this. Please continue.
No, actually, I'm going to stop it because that's the voice of my favorite D&D character, and I don't want to poison him by associating him with this.
Oh, God. This is the most, pointless...
And distasteful
bit of dialogue.
Mr. Plush is like, "What's going on?" And Peyton's like, "Oh, nothing. I gotta go to the bathroom." Bethany. And Bethany's like, or Mr. Plush is like, "Well, don't worry. I'll follow you in." And then he embarks on a monologue that I'm going to give a very light summary of.
Yeah, let's not go into details. Yeah.
But the upshot of it is that he believes that the girls in the beauty pageant, even though they are prepubescent, are flirting with him and know that they're flirting with him, and there's no reason Peyton needs to pull her pants up because he's going to pull them down anyways.
Yeah, Bethany.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And then Peyton comes in, and Peyton's like, "Hey, Mr. Plush, you're really not supposed to be in here." And Mr. Plush, he's doing the pedophile version of trying to angle that three-way for a sec, I guess, or something awful. And he's like, "Hey, Peyton, come here." And Peyton's like, "No, I'm... not doing that."
Peyton basically says, "Come give me a hug." And he's like, "Okay."
Yeah, so that's him doing the pedophile angling that three-way.
Right.
Only, you know, angling a three-way is harmless and funny, whereas this is awful.
Huh.
So
angling a three-way is still a lot of times...
it can be kind of scuzzy, but usually the way you're doing it is so obvious and so dumb where it's like, you know, "Hey, why don't you spend the night with me and my wife and maybe we can have a three-way?" "I'm just kidding."
Are
you into it? Are you into it? Nope. Then it's a joke. It's a joke.
Back out now.
You like that funny joke?
I mean, yeah, propositioning, you know, an adult is not really...
I mean, it depends on how you do it.
Right. But for the most part, it's not an immoral act. But obviously this is, and they try and make it somewhat comedic or something.
It is. I mean, Ketchum's delivery is so over the top, but you're not sure if that's bad acting or not.
Right.
And I think it's a little bit more distasteful if it is comedic, frankly.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I think that it's this part alone is one of the big reasons I will definitely not recommend this episode, because it's honestly pretty... I mean, like Lauren says, it's distasteful, but it's also just disgusting and shocking for really no reason. It really has nothing to do with the rest of the story. And you think... so right after that, Peyton and her friends eat this guy.
Yeah.
And you think that maybe they're actually kind of using their powers for some kind of good. Like, that guy was, pretty awful.
Yeah, he was
and obviously
a child rapist.
Pretty evil. So you're like, well, you know, that guy definitely deserved it. I have no sympathy for him getting shredded by a bunch of monsters because he deserved it. But they don't ever play up that angle at all.
Yeah, it's they don't play up any angle is kind of the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, except for they made this guy explicitly a pedophile. I think it would have been better. They could have had this exact same goddamn scene if they just had him go into the bathroom and being a little bit too like, hey, you need any help in there, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe be banging on the door a little bit.
A little bit ambiguous.
Yeah, or just...
It didn't need to be so explicit because the fact that it was made you think that there was some kind of misdirect with the girls. But since there wasn't, it was just totally superfluous. And it was just...
I'm a little bit less... I mean, I think it's pretty gross. I'm a little bit less, like, incandescent with fury than Ronald is just because I sort of assume that any adult involved in a child beauty pageant is a pedophile. So I'm like, oh, you're just confirming my suspicion. And also because I've seen that, like, It's Always Sunny episode about the child beauty pageant, like, 100 times. But...
it's a great one.
It is a really good episode. But I totally 100% understand, you know... If you don't come at it through my incredibly broken brain, this is fucked up. And even I'm like, this is fucked up. I'm just sort of okay with it because I expected it.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not
okay.
You're just
not surprised.
I'm not okay with it. I don't think it should be
I mean,
in here.
I think it's more of a device just for them to murder someone.
And have you just think they deserve it.
Yeah.
Well, but then there's no point in it because they just end up completely evil with no redeeming qualities. In the end, so there's really no reason to have this guy be evil. He could have been a good guy, and it wouldn't have changed the story at all.
If anything, it would have made it scarier if they were murdering good people. Yeah. I mean, we've already seen one make her mother cut her belly open,
right?
And then they're like, hey, but this monster's a little more complicated. But you've got a 30-minute play, and you don't have time to make him complicated.
Exactly.
So anyways...
Like, if it had been a little more ambiguous about whether the vampire kids were actually just, like, kids who got accidentally turned into vampires and they didn't really know what they were doing... Then I think the scene would have played a little bit better. But since they're just evil for really no reason and somewhat sadistic, then this point is totally, or this scene's totally pointless. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's fair enough.
It's awful. I'm not trying to say it's not awful.
Well, anyway.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
This is gross.
Yeah. So after they kill that guy. Bethany runs away, right?
She runs to her mom. And her mother at this point has vowed that these people are crazy. And so she's like, Bethany's like, Mommy, I saw something horrible. And I can't tell you what it is because you won't believe me. And her mother's like, hey, I just saw a little girl force her mother to cut her belly open. I'd believe a lot of things, kid. And so Bethany tells her mother, and her mother's like, nope, you were right. I'm not going to believe you.
You a damn liar.
Why would you make that up to me?
She gets angry at her.
Yeah,
when I know there's doings afoot.
Yeah, so they go home.
No, they go... like back to the hotel or something.
Yeah.
Then Peyton shows up in Bethany's bedroom, right?
Kind of.
I
wasn't sure.
I thought it was
because there's just like some sound effects.
It was a scary store, and Bethany was trying to wake her mom up. She's like, "Mommy, wake up!" And she wouldn't wake up.
And then
so
Peyton
it was implied there was some supernatural.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Well, I mean, it's obviously supernatural because there's goddamn vampires,
right?
But
and Peyton and Bethany at this point knows that they're vampires.
It could have been a separate ghost.
Yeah.
I mean, from
that
what
just
I understand,
happened to. Look like
what,
Peyton.
From what I understand
that's
about
the
this story, it could have been. You know?
Yeah.
It really had nothing. Apparently, it didn't relate to the rest of the story.
I think it's supposed to be that this is the first part of Peyton vampirizing Bethany, because after this, when they wake up the next day, the mother's like, hey, I've thought better of it. Let's not go to the ceremony if you don't want to, because it's pretty freaky and I've reconsidered your story. And the little girl... Bethany in a monotone goes, "Let's go."
No, because
that's
not what happened.
I thought
what did happen.
Yeah.
Fucking Bethany was like, she didn't want to go back, but her mom threw a huge whiny fit about it,
and then started crying.
Yeah, and she started crying, and Bethany was like, "Ugh."
So
fine.
There I go inventing a better version.
Yeah, that would have been better because there was definitely hints that Bethany was getting vampirized. And those culminate in nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just her mother. But maybe that's because her mother couldn't wake up at night. You know?
I think that one's... We kind of got to say that's vampire powers.
Otherwise, there's no reason to have any of that in the story.
There's no reason to have anything in this story.
There's no reason to have most of the stuff in the story.
There's no
they
reason...
They could have just had the end, and it would have made as much sense as the rest of the thing.
Let's get to the end. Now, this is the final 3 minutes of this episode. So, they're going in... And Peyton's there, and Peyton's mother is there, and Peyton's is, like, trying to walk into, like, the, like, where the
grand gala where they crown the winner is, right?
Yes.
And the mother's all like, you're not going anywhere. And then she calls Peyton a bitch a bunch. Which,
and it's and they call it the Grand Supreme.
That's the name. Okay, child beauty pageants always have stupid fucking names.
Oh.
Well, yeah, from what I understand about this from the story's context, this was like a competition between winners of regional competitions. So the Grand Supreme is like the whatever the big competition between all the winners.
Okay.
And all I know about this is listening to a Read It and Weep episode where they talk about child beauty pageants.
See, I don't know about anything. I just got that from the context of the mom being like, oh, I won and I could have won the Grand Supreme, but...
Yeah.
So I assumed, and maybe wrongfully, but I assumed that this was a winner's kind of like a championship.
It's... Yeah, I will buy that. But anyways, the mother's like, you're not going anywhere, Peyton. You suck. And Peyton's like, what do you got in your hand? And her mother's like, it's a stake and a hammer, which how does a vampire not recognize that? And she somehow manages to hammer the stake into her daughter, despite the fact that her daughter's like moving around and has vampire powers,
right.
Which that's really awkward. There's a reason that most vampire hunters use like crossbows and shit.
Yeah.
Just being like, stand still, I gotta
like
hammer this into you.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
I guess there was a reason they had it at night in the beginning. I mean,
yeah, so she hammers the stake into her daughter, and then her daughter, and the mother's like, oh, thank God it's finally over. And then her daughter's like, ha ha, everyone knows the heart is on the left, mother.
Which isn't even true.
Well, I might have gotten the side wrong.
Center, right?
No, I mean, like, she does say that, but yeah, it's like right in the middle, pretty much.
Yeah, well, whatever. She fucked up murdering her vampire daughter, and then her vampire daughter kills her.
Like, one-shots her.
Yeah, and Bethany and her mother are freaking out at this point, so they run into the hall. And then all of the other parents have, like, turned on their kids as well, and are apparently murdering them with shotguns and stuff. There's some... funny, you can't hear me doing the quotation marks, but they're there, lines where it's like, you suck, not anymore, and
yeah.
You got brains on my dress. Also, the noises they're playing in the background indicate that there's, like, a riot going on with,
right.
like, 100 people screaming, but on the other hand, it's apparently, like, three parents, like, murdering their three kids, and everyone else is standing by and watching.
Well, I think they locked all the doors, though.
But even so
yeah,
trapped
chained
in Carrie style.
That's fair, but... Ronald, I put it to you, you're at a child beauty pageant because, let's say...
let's not put me in that
scenario. Okay, no. We're going to make this work. Let's say that your wife got kidnapped by, like, essentially Jigsaw. And Jigsaw's like, Ronald, do you want to play a game? This game is called Save Your Wife by going to a child beauty pageant.
Okay.
And everyone there will think you're a
I'm
pedophile.
I'm forced there. Yeah, I have to sit there alone.
Yeah.
God.
I'd rather die.
Yeah.
But you love your wife, so you go.
Okay.
And then, you know, you hear some shouting out front. And then all of a sudden, you look up. The doors are all locked. And the parents are murdering the kids in the beauty pageant, right?
Yeah.
Your first instinct, because you're a good person, Jigsaw or no... Well, your first instinct is to, like, call Jigsaw and be like, am I allowed to intervene here? Murder my kid?
I'm sorry, this is clearly a felony. I mean, my hands are tied on this one.
I mean, I want to help them, but is that going to somehow stop me from fulfilling the terms of your watch this beauty pageant weirdness?
Our informal agreement.
But assuming Jigsaw is like, go ahead, Ronald.
Yeah. Which I don't know why he would. But...
Well, why wouldn't he? He's a fair person.
No, he's not.
I don't think Jigsaw
is the opposite of fair.
Oh, vampires are real. Maybe I should have been researching that instead of this weird murder
cancer
stuff.
Yeah.
Cure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then he'd be
you would intervene to try to save the kid.
I'm not positive that I would, but you know.
Well, hell no, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
No way. They're people with guns. Half of them are vampires.
They'll probably
you
shoot me if
you don't know they're vampires.
I assume. Okay. Look.
Unless they're
at the end of Resident Evil, Wesker dodges bullets. I'm assuming that's happening here.
I don't think so, because they're apparently
they all die.
The shotguns are working.
Yeah.
So there's apparently some riot going on.
No,
but
some of the parents die.
The kids do too.
Yeah.
It's
so if you saw, you know, like a kid run up to someone with a gun and just tear them apart.
Okay, at that point
wow.
You don't know what's going on. But I think early on at least the kid people in the crowd should be intervening.
I'm pretty sure if I heard gunshots I would get down. I don't know if I would run up
I'd
and
like
try and wrestle a gun out of somebody's hands.
I like to think that we're all better people than we know, and that the fact that we thought kids were being murdered would sort of tip it over into us trying to help.
How would you help?
I don't know exactly, but I like to think that I would try, depending on what the situation is.
What does trying mean?
Like,
all right, well, let's not get into a philosophical debate.
That's not what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying, if someone has a gun, you are almost useless.
At the very least, I would try to shield the kid with my body, I hope.
And that's why everyone should have guns at child beauty pageants.
And also, they should have steaks and garlic, so they're prepared whatever happens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the only way to stop a bad guy at a child beauty pageant
is a man with a bigger gun.
And the only way to stop a child beauty pageant where the kids are vampires, which
is also a gun.
Or some steaks and garlic and shit. So anyways, apparently the kids and the vampires are wiping each other out. The mother manages to sort of beg her way past the door, or I guess the people who are locking the door all get murdered by their kids or something, and she runs to the car and
she shoots the door open.
Okay, that's
changed. And she's like, stand back, honey, I'm gonna shoot the lock on the door.
Ears, baby.
Hold on, we're gonna get out of here.
And then she shoots a chain.
I'm sorry.
Kabam!
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying very good attention.
Come on, Bethany.
What?
Why did she turn into that voice?
Because
we gotta get out of here.
The thing you gotta understand about that voice is that it's not a thing I do. It's a thing that does me, and it's passed on to Ronald or Raul. And soon it'll be in you.
Why do so many people have trouble?
One day I will attain this voice. That's what you're saying.
Well, it'll just possess you. It's kind of like a demon, except it's a goofy voice that kind of makes you.
Give it
just
to you.
Kind of makes you sound like a kid's.
Give it to
you. Ha! I'm Steel Ranger. How are you? That's the only
that's
way.
Steel Ranger's super
well,
voice.
Howdy.
Wait,
how are you doing?
Aren't you a barbarian?
Yeah.
That's totally...
This is of no interest to anyone. No one
outside of this table cares about that.
Yeah,
I don't even care about it. What are you talking about? Don't include
why'd
me.
You ask them?
Tell you what, if enough people write in and ask for it, which they won't, I will record a little mini podcast explaining Steel Ranger and why
explain,
he talks like
this. We
need
to explain how to write in.
We'll have an email address.
It's at www.shutthehooleup.com.
No. Okay, wait. Everyone, okay, stop talking for a sec, and this is where we will put in the email address if we ever start releasing these and get an email address. So, 3, 2, 1.
It is, of course, radiobadtime@gmail.com.
And we're back. I'll edit it in if I ever get one, which I won't.
Showed you past Lawrence. You dumbass.
Okay.
This is essentially just something we do for my gratification at this point.
Just send it to me at twitter.com. Just mail it direct.
123 Twitter Street, Twitter Town, USA. Zip code, whatever Twitter is in, like, numbers.
90210.
In binary.
Yeah. It's 32 digits long, which actually it's longer than that because each character is, like, 16 bits.
Yeah.
Anyways.
8 bits.
What? Fuck you.
Suck it.
In the butt.
Anyway.
Yeah, so they run away, and the mother says to her daughter, if we survive this, I'm going to let you join the Girl Scouts. And that's the end.
That is the end. There's no, like, creepy ending. Just everyone died. I guess that's a little weird, but...
But they did say that they wanted to keep the doors locked so they could exterminate the vampires.
And then they opened them, and also the little girl might have been kind of partially
so
vampirized.
I think this is kind of...
It's possible.
I think it's kind of a Pandora's box situation.
It's honestly like hinted that that's coming, but it's never really given any evidence that she's vampirized.
So let's talk a little bit bigger picture on this. I think that there's the germ of a really, really good... like, story here. This just does nothing with it. There's a lot of interesting themes with, like, you know, youth and vampirism playing with, like, beauty pageants and how... You know, remember how in Interview with the Vampire there's that little girl who gets turned into a vampire? This is, like, a whole bunch of those in a beauty pageant. And you've got the inherent, like, predatoriness of a child beauty pageant interacted with vampires.
There's also, like, a pretty creepy line where it's like, I'll just get a new mom, indicating that that mom might never have really been her real mom.
Yeah, and you just could bewitch him. Like in the Interview with the Vampire.
Or just force them.
Like the little girl did.
And you can also play up the whole, like, evil kid angle because, you know, up until about age 10 or so, kids are pretty much sociopaths, you know?
Yep.
Is that true?
Well, sort of not. We don't like to admit it, but conscience is a lot something you have to learn.
Mm. Yeah, and it's also like they just don't really have empathy. They just don't understand it.
Yeah, so it's... I mean, there's a lot here that you could engage with. They just don't at all. And then you've got the writing issues we've highlighted previously. And all in all, I think it's really dire.
I would not recommend this at all. Let's go
that
into
being
that.
Said, more happened in this episode than any of the previous
and
episodes.
I mean, if it weren't for the pedophile thing, I would
there
say
there was a gun battle. I totally forgot the pedophile thing though.
Yeah,
the pedophile thing is definitely why I hard not recommend it.
Yeah,
if that didn't exist, I'd be like, eh, you know,
it's
it
funny,
was fast
bad.
It was somewhat fast, sometimes fast paced and sometimes really draggy.
If it weren't for the pedophile thing, I would say that this is a fun thing to listen to with your friends and make fun of.
Well, I don't think the pedophile thing needs to be about the pedophile.
I
think it's more about the eating of the vampires.
That's,
you know?
Well, you
then,
mean
then
if
they
had
need,
changed it.
Then
like,
they don't need the 30 seconds.
I didn't remember about the, I forgot about the whole pedophile thing.
Yeah. Well, if they're going to do that, then they don't need the 30 seconds of him.
Yeah,
you'd be
I know.
A creepy pedophile.
Agree.
Yeah. If that wasn't in it yet, I mean, it wasn't even necessary.
No,
but it was so gratuitous that it just like
it's like know. Those old B.
They just wanted shock value. Basically.
It's like those old B movies from the 70s where you're watching them and they're really really funny, and then they needed tits, so they just throw in a rape scene. And it's like if you can't figure out a way of getting tits in without a rape scene, you're very bad at making exploitation
yeah.
movies. And any enjoyment I can have from this is lost because. Suddenly I have to grapple with sexual assault when before I was laughing at your stupid monster.
It couldn't do a shower scene?
Exactly my point. There's or just a consensual sex scene, which is frankly easier to act than a rape scene.
What about
yeah.
one of those sweet eject from a fighter jet scenes where all the, your clothes get blown off?
I don't know if that's a thing, but yes, you could also do that. Or you
even
could,
if there's no fighter jets in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Jet. Oh
shit, my top.
Yeah, man.
Just
I mean,
imagine.
There's so many options.
Yeah, it's. I'm gonna.
We should have also done that in this. With the mom, not with the kid, obviously.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm like, what would she describe? She's like,
oh
no,
my
I'm
top's
lying.
Coming off, and here's my cup size, and here's the kind of bra I was wearing, and here's what my nipples look like now, and here's how much it cost me to get them because you
yeah.
know why she's had some work done.
Lawrence is joking, but that is actually what she would have said in the context of that.
I mean, she spent like 5 minutes describing her daughter's goddamn teeth.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. She's we're gonna get your snaggle tooth fixed.
Yeah, she's got her daughter has fake teeth.
Yeah, you know, honestly, like that part is pretty funny in retrospect. At the time, it was just kind of like, what are they doing? But thinking back on it, that's actually like pretty hilarious how bad that is.
If you get through the pedophile again, I'm not saying you should do this. If you could somehow look past the pedophile thing, there is a lot here that is funny. I can't. Ronald can't.
No, I definitely can't.
Raul kind of forgot about it.
Totally forgot.
And was just like, oh, thank God something's happening. Which,
yeah, which
that, I guess that's
kind of how I watch movies.
Yeah, that's a valid-ish perspective, I guess, but I can't, like, sign on to it.
Yeah. So I think that pretty much describes our...
So we got our first Raul recommend, my first hard pass, and Ronald's... Just doesn't like this any more than he's like most of us.
Apparently, I don't recommend anything.
You like something in the water.
I like something in the water. Well, let's do recommendation.
Well, first, we're at 48 minutes, so let's do some mailbag.
Mail?
Of course not. You know how we work. We think of a question somebody might ask us.
Oh, yeah.
So, Lawrence, what is your IQ? Signed, Roger Rabbit.
What?
Why would Roger Rabbit care?
Okay, the last
does anyone know their actual IQ? You have to keep that up to date. It doesn't stay static.
Is that the question we're going to answer now?
The only time I took an IQ test, which was between 7th and 8th grade, before I'd done a lot of my heavy drinking, I was registered at 130.
Liar! You were 92.
Dude, no, it was 130.
I pulled your test results. It was a 92.
No, it was a 1.
It was a 92.
Now, there's a lot of reasons why that doesn't mean very much. The IQ tests tend to have trouble, like, measure, unless they're specially designed ones for higher IQs.
So the only reason I asked was just so I could call you a liar and say it was really low. So let's just move on to you.
That's fair.
Also, IQ, when you're young, if you, like, start... Because it's an intelligence quotient, so it's basically like how you compare to other people around your age or compare to people above your age, pretty much. When you're younger, your IQ can be really high, and when you're older, you can average.
Yeah, I think I'm running a little bit above average, but I'm not going to like blame. I'm not going to be like, I'm great.
I'm running definitely below average.
I don't know. You
know. I would probably fail the test.
I mean, you got an F somehow.
It's not even graded. I don't know what you did.
I read somewhere the Dolphins have an IQ of 30. Apparently, Raul's stupider than the Dolphin.
You never put your name,
now, that,
sir.
That raised a lot of questions for me of how the fuck they designed a Dolphin IQ test.
What does that even mean? That
sounds, I don't fucking
that sounds
know.
Like complete bullshit.
Beat it twice. Really does. If 2 + 2 = 4.
It's like how
they're having sex again.
It's like how we have absolutely no idea how smart cats are because they refuse to ever go along with an intelligence test of any kind.
Well, I mean, couldn't you be like,
that's part of
the intelligence. Let's make this cat solve a maze. Or
you know. No, it'll just refuse to solve the
but
maze.
But
lie down.
Food, it would.
No, it'll just fuck off and lick itself for 20 minutes.
You leave it there for 20 hours is what I'm saying.
Okay, but then the whole point of intelligence is how fast does it solve the maze? And how do you factor in it chose to lick it stopping every 5 minutes to lick itself for 10?
Lawrence,
it solved the maze eventually, but it took forever, but
life,
it didn't seem to want to solve it.
Life will find a way, man.
Yeah, that is kind of the point. I think cats are pretty dumb.
Well,
I think cats are pretty smart.
Dumb.
Okay, so... anyways,
but then again, I'm done.
Mailbag question.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You always go off topic.
Rahul, what is your favorite movie?
Well, that's obvious.
Not to the listeners.
It's definitely Mad Max.
Which one?
Fury Road.
Okay.
It
replaced Terminator 3, huh?
Terminator 3 is up there, but... yeah, Mad Max was a lot better.
I guess. When we saw Mad Max Fury Road, as soon as the credits rolled, Rahul stood up and was like, that was the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, Rahul has seen Mad Max Fury Road like 5 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really have. Like, I don't know.
It is,
I've just never
amazing.
Seen
it
a
is,
movie
it is
as
an
good
amazing
as
movie.
That.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It appealed to every sense of what I like in a movie.
I mean, okay,
except
think about this. It's
I
an hour and a half long car chase.
I love car
so
chase.
So that's
like,
yeah.
That is why I watch
the
movies.
Only note I would give it, and it's sort of inappropriate because of the themes of that movie, no boobs.
Ah.
I mean, I know why it doesn't have boobs, and it's right that it doesn't have boobs, but I do like boobs in a movie.
That would distract you from the movie.
Yeah, that's fair. And also in a movie where part of the point is women aren't objects, it would be pretty weird if they're just like, now let's
like,
go
let's
objectify
some women.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah,
let's go.
What's your favorite movie, Ronald? Let's do this. Give people a sense of where our judgments are.
God, I have no idea what my favorite movie ever is. What's yours first?
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. It's a Sam Peckinpah movie from like 1974. You probably haven't heard of it or seen it, even among, like, you know, people who are into 70s movies. It kind of falls through the cracks. It's not a good movie. It's got a lot of tone and pacing problems, but it does such a singular job of putting you into, like, the headspace of the main character, and it's such a perfect evocation of mood. And I saw it when I was a depressed 11th grader and, like, just really unhappy with my life, and it just sunk into my psyche in a primal way where people point out the problems to me, and they're like, you know, you've got a scene of light comedy right next to, like, this brutal, brutal rape scene. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And also the rape scene doesn't need to be there, and there's so many flaws in this movie, and I understand it. But I still think it's a great movie without being, like, well-made or competent. And... okay, don't take my word for it. There is an excellent Roger Ebert review of it. Read the review, not the summary of the great movies, because the great movies one gives the plot away. And again, I say check it out, although if you check it out and you don't like it, I get it, man. I understand it, all of the flaws of that movie. I just love it because I can't be objective about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I'm sorry.
I haven't gone into. Yeah, I haven't.
You were like, "Hey, Lawrence, let's make some jokes," and I'm like, "No, here's 5 minutes about a movie."
Hey, we're talking about your favorite movie ever, man. I wouldn't expect you to laugh at it. I guess probably my favorite movie, at least as far as like comfort wise, is Conan the Barbarian. I've seen it probably 12 times. Like the
so good.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger one, not the like obviously the
Jason
remake.
Momoa or what the fuck.
Yeah.
Momoa.
Yeah. I like the guy. I did not like that movie.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was good.
He would have been a great Conan if he'd had a better script.
He honestly would have. Like
he looks like
it was
Conan
not his fault.
Look.
He's a good actor, but it wasn't his fault, but yeah, that movie wasn't very good. But the old one, oh man, I love it. I love just the whole thing. I've seen it so many times. The music's amazing. The whole, like, not having very much dialogue throughout the movie is great.
Yeah, that's another example of a movie that I don't think is, like, good exactly, but I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because it's got serious pacing problems.
It does.
And it's kind of like, you know, if Goebbels had set out to make a heroic fantasy movie, he probably would have made something like that, because there's all this stuff about the Aryan Superman. But on the other hand, it so clearly understands exactly what it wants to do, and it does that so well.
Yeah. And I think, like, one big thing about that movie and that, like, the new one didn't do was that it was on a budget, so, you know, they were more creative about a lot of the stuff that they did. The director recognized that the actors in it weren't that good.
Yeah.
And so he didn't put in that much dialogue, and it just, it works a lot better.
Yeah.
You know?
Arnold, you can't talk too good, so you're kind of...
Just don't.
Yeah.
No, honestly,
just
I mean...
be Arnold.
Arnold has got to be a better actor as he went on, but in his early career, he wasn't a very good actor.
He was just this thing on the screen that was amazing to look at.
Yeah, he was an amazing... he has an amazing body. Yeah.
It's not even like the body. The body's part of it, but it's also just like he's got like amazing charisma, and he's like,
he does.
So inhuman, but you know, like perfect sort of in a weird, he's like the ultimate kind of that body, you know?
Definitely.
Which is why he made a great Terminator.
Yeah, that is exactly why he made a great Terminator, because he looks inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, the Terminator, actually having him as the Terminator, like, from a logic perspective, makes no sense.
Yeah,
because
you want him to mix in.
Yeah. Whereas, you want him to be unremarkable.
Impossibly buff,
as opposed to the impossibly buff, like, kind of physically perfect guy.
Right.
But, I mean, on the other hand, he's built by machines, so they probably just are like...
Didn't understand, yeah.
Machines.
All right, let's go move on to recommendations.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Past our favorite movies ever, which are obviously recommendations, but...
Yeah. Although mine, again, take mine with a grain of salt, if there's a very real chance you will not like that movie.
Yeah, it's the same with Conan, I'd say. Like, it's not for everyone, but if you are into sword and fantasy, I'd say it's probably one you should check out.
I think we're all agreed, though, that if you don't like Mad Max Fury Road, there's no chance you're going to like what we're doing either. Yeah,
you can get the hell out. Let's move on to recommendations.
Okay. Well, we were talking about movies, so this is totally unrelated. I recommend Prometheus, even though it wasn't good. We were talking about movies that weren't necessarily good, but we really liked. I really like that. There are obviously a ton of issues with it, but I like that he's going for a huge, expansive world.
I think Prometheus is one of those movies that got panned when it like clearly took a lot of risks compared to most movies, because it did something pretty different and didn't follow guidelines that, like a lot of movies do nowadays.
I think my theory on Prometheus is that it's a pretty goofy movie when you get right down to
it. Definitely.
It's got one great idea in it, and this is totally borrowed from the Flophouse, so I'm not going to take credit for it, but the idea that we were made by an intelligent being that hates us and wants us to die is really powerful. It doesn't do that much with it. But I think the main reason it got panned so much, aside from that it took a lot of risks that didn't pay off, is that it looks like super serious, you know, sci-fi that's saying big things about our place in the universe.
It does.
And then it's goofy as hell.
The snake monster.
So its wrapper doesn't quite match. And I think that paradoxically, if it had been less shiny and more dark and had slightly, like, chintzier special effects, people would have been like, this is a really fun beat.
I agree, yeah. I think that's definitely true. I think there are some really awesome parts of it. One of my favorite parts about Prometheus was one of the promotional videos for it.
The TED Talk.
Yeah, the TED Talk.
Oh my god, that was so good. Yeah. Guy Ritchie did such a good job of acting like the most charismatic CEO of a trillion-dollar corporation like I've ever seen.
Yeah.
My recommendation was mentioned earlier, but if you're looking at child pageant stuff, the episode of It's Always Sunny, where I don't even remember, probably like Frank hosts.
Frank hosts a beauty pageant.
Beauty pageant, he
decides he wants to be in makeup, but he won't pay for like a good makeup. So
he gets
he
a mortician. And just like throughout the episode, things keep happening to Frank to make him look more and more terrifying.
Yeah, he gets a nosebleed.
It starts off with him falling and smashing his nose. So just like throughout the episode, he just looks more and more creepy, and he's trying so hard to convince everyone.
And then he starts singing a song about how he doesn't want to diddle kids. Yes. And as Dennis says, there is no surer way of making people think that you want to diddle kids than singing a song about how you do not.
So anyways, you should definitely check that out. That's my recommendation.
So I'm going to do two. One's a radio show and one isn't. First, there's a new show on Fox called The Mick, starring Caitlin Olsen. You guys got me thinking about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It is... It's not quite as horrifying as It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but on the other hand, it's still Kate Olsen-ing it up, and there are very few women who are as beautiful as her who are as good at making themselves seem ugly and horrible, and that's pretty good.
She's basically the same role.
It's D, slightly more functional. Okay. I guess it's like if D were 10% less of a sociopath and didn't have the gang holding her back.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen the commercials for it. It looked pretty good.
I'd say check it out. And second, we were talking about Tales from Beyond the Pale, and I feel, you know, just sort of to try to get Larry Fessenden and the rest, you know, in case they encounter this back on my side, I think that most of Tales from Beyond the Pale is excellent, and I'm going to recommend and give brief capsule reviews of three of them, because seriously, support old-time radio. This is like one of the few things that's still doing it, and they do it pretty well generally. And one bum episode shouldn't stop you from checking it out. So
I feel like if you listen to this show, you're probably interested in this kind of thing. So.
Yeah, if you're listening to the show, frankly, you already know about it. Yeah. But, okay, first up is Caper, which is about a couple of heist guys who get hired to break into a house. But then when they get inside the house, it turns out to be not haunted exactly, but just sort of this horrible non-Euclidean space, and things get weird and horrible, and it's very good, and you should check it out. Next up is The Hound. This is a slightly more qualified recommendation. It's by directed by Stuart Gordon and Dennis Pauly, I think. It's an adaptation of an H.P. Lovecraft short story, and it's got Barbara Crampton and a bunch of other people from Reanimator in it. I don't think it's got Jeffrey Combs, but, you know, no Jeffrey Combs, but a lot of other people in it. It's got some really kinky sex, as befits, you know, a Stuart Gordon movie. I think the only flaw in it is that it's got a Charles Band score, which makes it a little bit too light and, you know, airy. But on the other hand, if you really want to hear what Barbara Crampton sounds like when she's faking orgasm, this is kind of what you got to do. And I just, you know, it's good fun in the way that Reanimator was when it wasn't doing disquieting, horrible things. And finally, let's go with Junk Science, which is about it's set in sort of the near future where travel around the solar system is possible, but interstellar travel isn't. And it's about a guy who goes in and he's like trying to find ships to salvage, and he finds a whole graveyard of them, but one of them is occupied by something a little unusual. And this one's notable partially because, you know, it's really good, but also it's got Allison Wright from The Americans in it, and it's really fun to, one, hear her doing her like actual accent instead of pretending to be a meek American, and two, she just does an excellent job of like being menacing and cool. So, yeah, I say check out all three of them, and frankly, most of Tales from Beyond the Pale. So, signing off, see you guys next time.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it.